To look right at me. I'm not going to, this morning or this evening, I'm not going to be as preachy as I usually am. There's a reason for it. I think that the easiest time for the devil to get into a church is when the church has just left the mountaintop. And I want everybody in the house now to listen carefully. Every teenager, every child, every adult, everybody watching on the closed circuit TV screens, everybody, I want you to listen very carefully. We're tired. I've never seen so many tired people. Numbers of our people work themselves sick, I mean physically ill, this week. And at a time like this, we need to gather the family around the hearth and remind ourselves that when we are tired, and after a great spiritual feast and victory, we are sometimes a little prone in the special way to be vulnerable, especially concerning our relationship with each other. In the cycle of my sermons, it has come the time again when I speak along this line, and especially do I choose to do so because this is the Sunday following our great pastor's school. You see, I want everybody in this room who loves me to love everybody else who loves me. I could not ask for a church of people more thoughtful of their preacher. I wish you could see and know of all the thoughtful reminders that have been mine this week. Now, Jesus said, before he went back to heaven, he said, Father, I pray for those that thou hast given me, that they may be one, even as we are one. Now, the time has come for us again to look in our hearts and see what's there, and see if there's ill toward any, to see if there's bitterness, vengeance, or hatred toward any. You know, I'm going to speak this morning on the subject, it's fun to die. It's fun to die. All of your unhappiness, check my treble, would you please? All of your unhappiness is caused because is caused by you're not getting what you want. Did you hear me now? All your unhappiness is caused by you're not getting what you want. Now, if you can come to the place where you don't want anything, then you won't have any unhappiness. Well, you say, preacher, how can I get to the place where I don't want anything? You can die. And it's fun to die. Now, listen to the story carefully. Everybody, look out at me. No one wavering. No one looking away. Everybody watching. Israel had been in terrible sin. Awful sin. A king comes to the throne whose name is Hezekiah. And this king leads Israel in a marvelous and great revival. The highlight of that revival is our text. Yonder is the altar standing visible to all. A sacrifice, an animal, a burnt sacrifice is laid on that altar. The people gather round, great multitudes of people gather round and look at that sacrifice on that altar. Suddenly a solitary figure comes toward the altar. He has in his hand a lighted brand. A fire leaps up and the offering on the altar is in flame. Then there is tense silence when suddenly the vast throng begins to burst forth in a giant burst of jubilant music, and the trumpets begin to play. Why? Because an animal is burning. And as that little animal burns on that altar, the people begin to shout and clap their hands, the trumpets are played, and there's unspeakable joy. Now listen carefully. Why did they shout when the burnt offering was destroyed? Here's why. The only offering that was made in Israel that did not picture Jesus was the burnt offering. The burnt offering pictured the child of God. And as that burnt offering was being devoured with the fire, each Jew there was saying, "That's me dying there. I've given myself to die, as the apostle said, I die daily. As he said, I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that ye present your bodies a living sacrifice." The Jew was saying, "I have died to self, and that altar represents me, and that burnt offering represents the fact that I am dying to myself." And because there was that dying to self, the Jews burst forth in a great shout of exultation and joy. You know, you'd be surprised how much fun it can be to die. I was reading the paper this morning, or listening to the news, and I found out that Connersville, the men were talking, and I found out that Connersville High School won the state basketball, that's right, isn't it? Championship. And I began to think about Connersville. What does that mean to me? Years ago, I preached at a church in Connersville. In fact, many years ago, our church was trying to have about 1,300 in Sunday school. We had a Sunday school contest with that church in Connersville and the Indianapolis Baptist Temple for the right to call ourselves the largest church in the state. Connersville Church had a split. That church robbery, a vicious split. I guess about the most vicious split of any church I've ever heard in my life. Loved ones would not speak to each other. Friends of a lifetime had broken their friendships. Bitterness. The honest truth is, they wouldn't speak to each other on the street. And just about half the church walked out and went out the edge of town and started another church. One night, months later, this new church was a flourishing church, as was the old church downtown. But one night, the people came to church, and the pastor said as they came in, "We're not going to have church tonight." The folks were stunned. "What are we going to do?" And the pastor said, "Get on buses." And the people got aboard buses, and the pastor gave instructions to the entourage to leave. He said, "Follow me." The pastor drove down to the old church where they used to be members, and the church with which they had split, and against whom they had bitterness. And the pastor stopped in front of the church. It was church time down there. And the pastor said to his members, "Now get off the buses." And they got off the buses. And the pastor said, "Now follow me." And the pastor walked in at church time, walked up on the platform, and put his arm around the pastor of the old church and said, "My brother, I want you to forgive me. I'm sorry. I want you to know I've done wrong." And he said to his people, "Now, I want you to do the same thing." And those people started mingling among each other. Wounds were healed. Friendships restored. People that hadn't spoken suddenly were speaking and hugging each other and asking forgiveness. Those two churches, they didn't come back together because the new church, I love the new building, didn't come back together. But right down here in Connersville, Indiana, they bought a full-page ad in the Connersville paper, and they put in that ad an apology to the city of Connersville. They said, we have not acted Christian toward each other. It has hurt our testimony in this city. And we want you, the citizens of Connersville, to forgive us. These same two churches went together and bought, printed thousands of brochures. And on every brochure it said, "We're sorry." And they went house to house and put a brochure in the door of every house in the city of Connersville asking for forgiveness. Ladies and gentlemen, that's as much New Testament Christianity as soul winning is. And they healed their wounds and mended their fences. Now, let me tell you something, folks. You'll never feel as good as you do when you die to yourself. When you die to your own way, and you die to your hurt feelings, and you die to revenge, and you die to retaliation, and you die to vengeance, and you die to my rights, and you die my way, and you die to I've been hurt, and you die to you're not treating me right, and you die to I don't like what you're doing, and you die to wants and wishes and your own desires. Listen, I'll guarantee you one thing. That church, when they went back to their church that night, I'll guarantee you that was a happy bunch of people. Why? Because it's fun to die. You know, you'd be surprised the joy you'd get and feel when you crawl on the altar and die. When you, for example, when you and your husband clash, you take your side and lay it on the altar. And you say to him, whatever you want, that's fine. And die. You'll be surprised how good you feel, and how much better you feel than say, well, I got my rights. I got my rights. I'm a little tired of you treating me anyhow. You're not happy to do that, but you'd be surprised. You'd be shocked if you knew the joy that would come to you when you say, I'm dying to myself. I'm dying to hurt feelings. I'm dying to my own wishes. I'm dying to my own wants. I'm dying to revenge. I'm dying to vengeance. I'm dying to fighting back. I'm dying. You'd be surprised how much fun it is. You know this story. It's not the first time I've told it. 23 years ago, this fall, it's this summer, we had in this church trouble. No doubt about it. And by the way, some of the folks that didn't want me to stay here were good people, fine people. They didn't understand me. I was a Texan, and they were from the Northland. They couldn't understand me, and I could understand them. Some good people. But in that group, there was a lady who at that time was probably around 80 years of age, fine lady, lovely lady, who really got bitter toward me. She moved away, lived in another city in a senior citizen's home, a very, very nice senior citizen's home. Her son was my friend. And by the way, she has grandchildren and great-grandchildren in this room this morning. Some of the finest members of our church. But that lady couldn't stand me. Now, I never have understood that. Nice as fellow as I am. I said, I never have understood that. Nice as fellow as I am. I said, I never have understood that, nice a fellow as I am. Thank you, Mother, and both the others for that encouraging. But I am her son-in-law, wrote me a letter. He was seriously ill, and he finally found that the illness was unto death. He went to heaven a few years ago. He wrote me a letter, and he said, Dear Pastor, he did not live here at the time. Lived away, moved away, retired. He said, Dear Pastor, he called the name of his mother-in-law, and he said, She's 100 years old now, and I wish she loved you like I love you, and I wish she knew you like my family knows you. He said, Before I die or she dies, I hope that somehow that she can love you like I love you. I never got over that letter. I was preaching down in Minster, Ohio. I told the pastor after the morning service, I want to borrow a car. I drove through a tornado all afternoon. I actually saw a trailer house, mobile home, lifted up to the sky and turned over and sat down on its top less than 100 yards from where I was driving. With my faith in God and my belief that God had seen me through, I was scared to death as I saw it. But I drove all afternoon to and from the place. I went to a senior citizen's home. And walked up, went up to the second floor, I think it was, and knocked on the door where she lived. I opened the door and she was shocked. She was a very sharp lady. She's still alive, by the way, 104, I think now, 103 or 4. And she was a very sharp lady. And reminded me an awful lot of Ma Sunday, a great deal of Ma Sunday. And so I said, hold it. I said, don't close the door. I said, I'm Brother Hiles from First Baptist Church, Hammond. I've come to tell you that I love you. I said, could I come in? I walked in. She sat down. And I said, you have a son-in-law that's very ill. He may not live long. I said, he wants to see us love each other. And I want you to know that whatever I've done, if I've done anything to hurt you, I'm sorry. I want to be your friend. I'm going to pray. When I finish praying, I'm going to hold out my hand. And if you would take me as your friend, I want you to put your hand in mine. And I prayed and wept. When I finished praying, I said, now take my hand if you'd be my friend. And I felt her hand right here on my arm trying to find my hand. And that old 100-year-old hand slid down to mine. And tears began to mingle with each other. And she became my friend again. You know, I could have gone there and, I'll tell you what, sister, if you don't like me, you just lump it. But I've done that. I'm very qualified to do that. Had a heap of practice. But you know what it feels good? When you die. When you learn to say, I'm sorry, I've been wrong. But I have been wrong. Well, then go tell them you think you may have been wrong sometime, somewhere, or you may be someday if you live long enough. But you'd be surprised how much fun it is to die. I mean, when you and your wife clash, step back in the shadows and don't retaliate. Hey, you know, I was thinking of this. I don't know anything in the Bible that says, husbands, boss your wives. Isn't that good preaching, ladies? But honestly, I never thought about that before. You know, fellas, I'm the head of my house. Well, if you have to say it, you're probably not. But I find scripture says wives obey your husbands. But not one place in the Bible, listen, not one place in the Bible does it say husbands boss your wives. I don't find anything in the Bible that says pastors boss your churches. You know, I believe that if you cannot win leadership, don't have it. I will not lead by force. I won't do it. I will step outside. I will not be involved in a place where I'm supposed to lead if I've got to lead by force. I was preaching not long ago, a few years ago in a certain place, got off the airplane, went to the airport. The pastor said, Dr. Tiles said, before you start preaching, I want to tell you something. You can't mention anything here about women wearing pants. Well, now, the truth is, I probably wouldn't have said a thing about it while I was there. But I didn't say, I'll tell you, brother, God called me to preach you to deer, tickling, back scratching, penny pinching, nickel, lemon, salt, soap, pick. I'll tell you, I didn't do that. I took my suitcase, started back the airplane. He said, where are you going? I said, back home. Why? Because you just crossed the line. I'm simply saying, I'll tiptoe in the shadows. But I will not force my leadership. No way. Husbands, you might be surprised how masculine it might be to give in sometimes. You know, sometimes it takes more strength to yield, acquiesce. I said about last night, suppose that Muhammad Ali came up here. He and I are going to square off. Now, I'd like to have a shot at him. But I want to come up from behind side. And, but you know, now, let me ask you a question. For Muhammad Ali, which would take more restraint for him to fight me or not to fight me? Not to, just the same with me and you, Stan. I mean, if you and I got in a fight, take far more restraint me not to fight you because I could just squash you like that. And, but I'm saying that you'd be surprised, the joy. I'm talking about fun. I've held many a sword in my hand. I remember Brother Joe. I've forgotten his name. But he was a mission volunteer. In my church in Garland. He was going to the mission field. And you hired him to teach in Open Door Baptist School. You sorry church sheep stealer. And boy, I was furious. I came over to your office one day. Remember that? I came to your office one day. And I said, Joe, what in the world? That man's going to the mission field. You got him teaching school. He said, I felt led to hire him.
And I said, well, little nothing, man, that's my member. You haven't got any right to counsel my member. I said. And I said some things I wish I'd never said. And I've got some days I wish I could relive in my life. I've got some wounds I wish I'd never inflicted. I've got some hurtful things that come from my mouth like the venom of a serpent I wish I'd never said. Somebody said, preacher, the passing of the years, do you see any change in your preaching? I do not know of a single thing that I've cut down on far as conviction's concerned. I think I preach like I always did, conviction-wise. But I tell you, if there's a change, it's this. If I have wounded any soul today, if I have caused one soul to go astray, if I have wronged in my own willful, will dear Lord forgive that? I believe that's the thing now, as I look back over my life. I believe that God's people need to learn to die to being hurt. You know, you'd be surprised how much fun it can be to turn the other cheek. Brother Roloff used to say, I'll tell you what that means, Brother Jack. He said, that means if a guy hits you like that on that cheek, he said, you can't hit him real good like that. You got to turn the other cheek to draw back and hit him back with. And that's Roloff, but that's not Bible. Sorry about that. You know better now. But I'll show you what it means. Now, the Bible said, man hits you on the right cheek, turn your left, right? Okay, now, if I hit you on the right cheek, that's the left cheek. What does it mean? Only in the world that I can hit Brother John without backhanding him on his right cheek is Brother John turn around. And that means if somebody sneaks up behind you and they don't even tell you they're going to attack, and all of a sudden they let you have it on the right cheek, that means you turn around and say, look, if you like to hit, I got another cheek you haven't hit yet. I'll let you have another one. You say, what? That's not natural. No, I'm not talking about natural either. Don't supernatural. You know, people from all over America came here. And boy, this morning they're saying, boy, that's the greatest church I ever saw. And it is. It isn't about it. But you know what they don't realize? If they stayed around here 10, 12 months or a year or so, they'd find out that 90% of us are human. And they'd find out that we have... You're not doing a thing for me. But anyway, they'd find out that we have temptations and problems and feelings and animosities and revenge like everybody else does. You know, every once in a while, we ought to just have a good old cleaning out. And die. I mean die. Die to your hurt feelings and die to yourself and die to your way and die to what I want and die to where, to what, to revenge and die to hatred and die to malice and die. I mean die. What does it matter? If you don't want anything, you can't be unhappy if you don't get it. And so if somebody comes up behind you like this, you say, boy, he stabbed me in the back. I'll get him back. I'll tell you how to get him back. Turn around and offer the other cheek. He'll die of shock. Pour heaps of coals of fire upon him. The Bible says, if you don't seek revenge, pour coals of fire. Fellow went to his pastor and said, pastor, my wife and I are having trouble. What can I do? He said, have you tried pouring coals of fire upon her head? No, I said, I've poured ice water down her dress, but never thought about coals of fire upon her head. I'm simply saying, look, this is not as spectacular as a rapture, but brother, we won't enjoy the services unless we get our hearts clean. I'm talking about school teachers mad at parents. I'm talking about parents that are upset with school teachers. Look, nobody here is perfect, not even you. You're almost perfect, but not perfect. And the honest truth is, we will not have a right to have a pastor school next year unless we purge ourselves of ourselves. You'd be surprised. Hey, thank you. You'd be surprised how much fun it can be. Yesterday I was going down the street. Here's this guy up beside me. The light was red. He was watching up there to see if, so when the caution light came facing this way, so he could take off and beat me. And I was watching up there to see if I could take off and beat him. Isn't that silly? And so all of a sudden, boy, that caution light came on. And just before the light turned green, I took off. And he took off. I was ahead of him because he was driving a Ford. And I took off. And he took off. And it dawned on me, Jack, you're a Christian. What in the world fun can you get out of getting there before he does? 2 seconds. And I just slowed down to about 20 and waved him on by. You'd be surprised how much fun that can be. Really, you'd be shocked. I mean, you'd be amazed how much fun to give in. I mean, when you learn to love those that hate you and learn to pray for those that despitefully use you and learn to bless those that curse you and learn to say, young people, you'd be surprised how much fun you could have. Talking about fun. I'm talking about ball game fun. I'm talking about ice cream cone fun. I'm talking about fun, ha-ha fun. You'd be surprised how much fun you can have if you'd say to your dad, okay, Dad, if he's unreasonable, it may be your dad's tired. It may be he's weary. It may be he's having a tough time making the payments on the house. It may be your dad feels lonely. You'd be surprised, youngsters, how fun. You'd say, instead of saying, oh, come on, Dad, I'm not. Be shocked how much fun you could have if you'd say, yes, sir. But you sit in the house, he's wrong. Okay, you'd be surprised how much fun you could have letting him have his way if he's wrong. You'd be surprised how much fun a staff member has when a staff member says, preacher, I want what you want. Now, I don't always get a demand what I want, but I'm saying, the happiest folks on my staff are folks that say, Brother Hiles, I want what you want. This is what I want. Look, listen to me. Look at me. Don't look around now. I'm talking to you. You need this. Good night, you need this. You need this as much as you need to quit smoking. You need this as much as you need to quit watching television. You need to die. To die. When you lose your wants. You know, I said this week. They don't make the house that I want. And they don't make the car. I'm talking about Rolls Royce. I'm talking about Mercedes. I'm talking about Cadillac. I'm talking about Continental, Lincoln. They don't make the car. I mean this. They don't make the car I'd walk across the street to own. They don't make it. There's not one. They don't make the suit that I covet. There's nothing you could give me to please me. That's material. Now the Lord hears me. I don't want anything. Big denominational boss, one of the big denominations in America. I put one of my books about a preacher that belonged to his denomination that had gone bad. And he wrote me a letter. His lawyer wrote me a letter and threatened legal action if I didn't do something about it. And I called him on the phone. I said, my brother, Mr. Denominational National Secretary, I said, I haven't got any money in the bank. If you sue me for what I've said, I can't give you any money. Now, I said, I do have a house that I have some equity in. I imagine that if it's sold, I might could get $30,000 equity out of my house. That's all I got in the world. Now, I said, brother, if you want my house, don't go to court. I'll send you the title today. Of course, if it means that much to you, you don't have to sue me. You can get rid of your lawyer. And I mean that. Let me tell you something, folks. They don't make the house I'd trade a friend for. Some of you people work with each other and get mad over a piddling little dollar. I mean, a little money. He cheated me out of some money. There's not enough money in Fort Knox, Kentucky. Trade one friend for. Not one. And I said to him, I said, now, you want the house? I can get my lawyer this afternoon and deed it to you if you want it. What you going to do with a guy like that? You think he said, yeah, I'll take the house. Look, you can't hurt a dead man. You can't offend a dead man. You can't upset a dead man. You can't hurt a dead man. And I'm saying, look, I'm saying, that right now in First Baptist Church Hammond. You say, well, Hodge, you must know something I don't know. Yeah, I know you're human. I know we're human. And I know that right now we're tired. We're very tired. And our temper is on edge. And some of us do mighty easy right now for us to have a little hurt feeling come. Or somebody's going to say something that we're sharp in our retaliation. And I'm soon to say, we ought to say with the Jews, I roll the trumpet when I die. When I die to myself, my own wishes. I'll tell you, I don't want to. So, you know what I want? I want you to spend some time praying for me. That's all I want. I want you to spend some time baking some cookies for me so you can think about me a while. If you stopped the service right now, gave me a title deed to a Cadillac, it wouldn't bless me or thrill me near as much. Those little fingers went on my door this morning and gave me some pennies. And they said, I love you, Brother Howells. You see, our sense of values is all cattywampus. We don't understand what's true and what's rich and what's right and what's good. And if you'd come to the place where it's okay, in my home, I'll die, then you wouldn't be hurt anymore. I've said to 5 couples in the last 2 weeks, there's only one problem. One thing would cure your home problem if either one of you were good Christians. Just good enough Christian to give in. Just good enough Christian. Fellas, it's not a sign of masculinity for you to say, nobody's going to run over me. That's not a sign of being a man. You know what? You'd be surprised how Christ-like it'd be if you let somebody run over you. They took our Lord and drove nails in his hands, spikes in his feet, crown of thorns on his brow. He yielded as a lamb before his shearers is dumb. And you'll never be as good a Christian as you are when you die. You die. You die. When did they blow the trumpet? Were the trumpets blown when the golden candlestick was put in place? No. The trumpets blow when the table of showbread was put in place? No. The shouting come when they put the laver in place? No. Not even when they put that holy place, holiest of all. But when the people saw that lamb, that burnt offering, that sacrifice on the altar, and suddenly a burning brand is brought by a solitary figure, and all of a sudden that lamb goes up in smoke, the people clap and cheer, and the trumpets blow. Why? Because the people said, that's what I did. I died. I died. I died to myself. There's some happy people here this morning in this room. You know who they are? Huh? The young people who in the parade were too much of a big shot to participate? No. They're cynical. Who's happy? Those wide-eyed teenagers that cooperated in the parade. Gave themselves to it. I know some happy folks this morning. Some ladies that spent all week here last week. During sessions, they'd run to the toilet and clean the toilet. I know who's happy. Randy Erickson's happy. He's been a servant. The other day we're having church. It's terrible. I shouldn't even say this. Randy was called out, and the sewer had backed up in the boiler room. I mean, that much of sewer. You do know what's in the sewer. And Randy had to wade in it to get it fixed. You know why he's happy? Because he loves sewers. He's happy because he's been a servant. Who's happy? Those are the ladies who cleaned the toilets. Those men who took vacations, stood out here in a cold parking lot all week long to feel like they had a part in pastor school. You know why they're happy? Because they died. They died. You know, I'm 56 years old, folks. I've been in this business a long time. I've seen them come and go. I've stood over my fallen prey with a sword, with the blood dripping from the sword.
Believe me, it's not much fun. But I've also been on the floor with a gash in my spiritual heart while somebody else stood over me and held a sword that was dripping. Believe me, it's more fun to have the sword pierce you than hold the sword in your hand. I've been the object of shooting with my venomous fangs, serpentine accusations toward others. I've also been the object of all kinds of accusations against me. Believe me, it's a lot more fun to be the object of criticism than to be the critic. Now, this morning I come to my church and forfeit the usual Sunday morning sermon to tell you, let's be careful. Let's be careful. Let there not be anything but death. It's fun to die. When Linda sang in a group the other day, Linda's about 11 months pregnant now. She looks. And, but, she's saying in a group, she's now a mother, lovely wife, English teacher at the college. I'm sorry, a marriage teacher at the college. And, expecting another baby. While she was singing, my mind wandered back, just a few miles south of here, to the Dyer Mercy Hospital, where she was dying, a little 4-year-old child, blood dripping from her face, and her hair filled with blood as the nurse ran down the hospital corridor, screaming, "Call Dr. Friedman! Call Dr. Friedman! Call Dr. Friedman! She's dying! She's dying!" And as she sang, my mind wandered back to that little dark room where I entered. No patient was there, no lights were on. And I knelt and said, "Dear God, before I pray for you to save our little girl, I pray you'd show me any sin that I've got in my life, anything between you and me that might keep me from having my prayers answered." And all of a sudden, across in front of me, there was a picture of a deacon. I've told the story so much I'll not belabor you with it again. But I set out on a trip in life to make it right with that deacon. And Brother Joe, it's been a long time since then, and I've made some awful mistakes. I've been stubborn some when I shouldn't have been. I've sometimes run when I should have been walking, and walked when I should have been stopping and waiting. And I've made some mistakes, and God knows I have, and you've witnessed them. But Brother Joe, since she was 4 years old, it's been about 22 years now, this is the God's truth. I never have had one thing in his heart toward anybody. And I can put that in my hand on that Bible and say that. God knows I'm telling the truth. A lot of folks in the church are better Christians than I am. But a lot of you are better Christians than I am, sure need to hear what I'm saying right now. You'd be amazed how you'd feel. Blow the trumpets! Shout the victory! I died. I died to criticism. I died to revenge. I died to retaliation. I died to hatred. I died to malice. You'd be amazed how much fun dying can really be. Father,